Right now, time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. You can find Arthur right here live on a Monday morning here on Robinhood Radio. We rebroadcast Arthur during the noontime hour during the week and also on the weekend as well. Let's bring him in on this Monday morning. Good morning, Arthur.
I'm just everywhere.
More than you know.
More than I want.
That's right.
To be everywhere. So people often ask me, do I watch food TV? You know, do I watch, I don't know, the food channel, the cooking channel? And I have to say that I do, in passing, sometimes see something I want to watch for a few minutes. But basically, the only food program I really get riveted to is Barbecue Pitmasters, which is not on either of those stations. I'm not even sure what station it's on. I also just run across that, and then I say, oh, yeah, 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 and then I get involved. So over the weekend, there was a show. I think they were doing Marathon Barbecue. Have you ever watched Barbecue Pitmasters?
Absolutely.
Yeah. For some reason, watching these guys cook is way more interesting than watching anybody else cook on TV.
There's only two food shows.
One thing, they all talk about what they actually do. Which is, you know, some of these people on TV don't even, you know, they don't teach you anything. But they do teach me something. Anyway, over the weekend, I found a show where they were cooking something I'd never heard of. A Vegas strip steak. Do you know what that is?
A steak you get in Vegas?
Well, you would say, no. It's a very cleverly named steak that has absolutely nothing to do with Las Vegas. It has to do with the butcher who, quote, discovered it. I don't know how you discover a new piece of meat on the cow, because the meat on the cow is the meat on the cow. But what this man, his name is Mata, M-A-T-A, and he actually has a Ph.D. in butchering or some. They don't call it that. Anyway, he took Let's go backwards here. There are several new cuts of meat, or I should say there are several cuts of meat that are now being cut from the animal, and they have new, what we used to call fanciful names. They're just made up names, and, you know, can I think of one that's, there used to be a steak called the Newport steak. It was a totally made up name, and it was a cut from the chuck. By a butcher here in New York, and it became popular in the 1970s and 80s. And I don't know if it's the Florence Meat Market was the place that cut this Newport steak. Anyway, the chuck is basically the shoulder of the cow, the cattle, the steer, whatever we're going to call this animal. If it's a steer, it's a castrated male. If it's a female, it's a cow. It's cattle altogether as a group. And the chuck is an enormous, enormous cut of meat. It's called a primal cut. There are I forget how many primal cuts on a cow, but the rib is a primal cut. And, the rump is obviously the back end of the animal is a primal cut. The chuck is the front shoulder, and it's distinguished by great flavor, as anybody who likes a chuck for their hamburgers will tell you. Or a nice chuck roast, pot roast, but it's not tender meat. The chuck meat has a lot of cartilage and various tissue that, because it's a working muscle. The chuck is, you know, it really does work. It's what moves the animal. So any muscle that is used a lot has less tenderness than the muscles that are not used. For instance, a filet or filet mignon, or that big strip of muscle that runs down the back of the animal supporting the spine, does not do as much heavy lifting, literally, as some other cuts of meat, and so it is the most tender in the animal. A rib, what we sometimes call prime rib, are six of the ribs that are extremely tender, which is why we call it prime rib. Although I've been hearing lately that we're not supposed to call it prime rib because the word prime only applies to something else. I'll get to that in a minute. So the and what else? You know, things like the sirloin strip is really not sirloin; it's top loin. That's not a well-used muscle on the animal, so that of course has tenderness also, and that's what we call a New York strip steak, or some people call it a sirloin strip steak, even though it's not sirloin. Of course, the T-bone and porterhouse, which incorporate a piece of the fillet and a piece of the top loin or strip steak on either side of a T-shaped bone. That's why it's called a T-bone. The name porterhouse is a fanciful name, but it's a fanciful name from the 19th century, so we're all pretty accustomed to knowing what that is. But this chuck is a problem because the meat is extremely flavorful, which is what happens when you work a muscle. It develops flavor, but it is not that tender. So traditionally, chuck was not used to cut steaks. However, in this day and age, when everybody wants a steak and not everybody can afford the best cuts for steak, butchers are always looking to find a piece of meat that is really flavorful and has more tenderness than the usual cut of chuck. So this Mr. Mata, Professor Mata, fooling around with his chuck one day, discovered that he could cut away in a very efficient manner a piece of meat, a small piece of meat, from the neckmost part of the chuck and cut away all the bad things and come up with a piece of meat that is free of all the toughness of chuck, because you've cut away the cartilage, blah, blah, and you end up with a relatively... Now, I wouldn't call it tender, but I would say a relatively chewable, a nice piece of meat. And it has good marbling, which, of course, adds some tenderness and some succulence or juiciness to the meat. And we now have what's called a Vegas strip steak. So on this show that I watched with the Barbecue Pitmasters, they really threw them a wild card because usually... the cuts of meat that they use are cuts of meat that are good for smoking and barbecue. In this case, they had to grill the meat because that's what you do with a steak. You don't want to... I think one of the contestants actually did put a little smoke to it, but that's not exactly what you want to do with your steak because, well, whatever. And it really looked good, I got to say. And I don't know if anybody around me... Meaning, I go to a butcher. I'm going to talk to him about that. And I also go to Whole Foods, where they have a great butcher, actually more than one. But the woman, Ursula, I have a communication with her, and I'm going to ask her about that. I'm sure she knows, because she's a young woman, and she knows all about these new cuts of meat. By the way, you're probably not going to find a Vegas strip steak in your supermarket. I don't think that most supermarkets actually cut their meat. They buy the meat already cut up. They don't buy primal cuts anymore, which is these big pieces of carcass that need to be broken down. It's the word the butchers use, break it down, into cuts of meat, that retail cuts of meat. So I don't think you're going to find the Vegas strip steak, but I'm going to talk to my two butchers and see what they know, and do they ever carve out a Vegas strip steaks from the chuck. I must say, I came back from Italy a few years ago, and I'm not going to remember the name of this cut of meat in Italian, but, excuse me, I took a sip of coffee. My friends in Salerno use this piece of meat to make their stew. It's really beautiful, tender, flavorful meat. And I come home and I ask my butcher about it, and he tells me that it's actually a cut of the chuck, which makes sense for a stew, but that if he cut it out for me from an animal in the U.S., it would not be nearly as tender as the meat in Italy, because one, the meat in Italy is slaughtered at a much younger age, so it tends to be more tender. And, well, that's pretty much it. He said, you know, I could cut you that piece of meat, but, you know, it's never going to turn into a good stew because it's so lean and tough. And even tough meat, you know, really tough cuts do not, in fact, make for a good stew. I can testify to that because very recently, I think I reported on this on the show, that I made this Guinness stew using beef chuck stew meat that I bought in the supermarket, and it was not that good. And then I just saw my cousin on Saturday, who was also complaining about the quality of meat that she's buying, and that she can't make a good braised brisket anymore because the brisket is too lean. Just a little side note, on the same program that I saw the Vegas strip steak on Barbecue Pitmasters, they were also cooking the flat, what they sometimes call first cut brisket. And all these barbecue guys are saying, oh, my God, I never cooked just the flat part because it's so hard to cook. It's so lean. it's temperamental. Sometimes the meat will just won't get tender. It'll just stay like a rock. And sometimes it'll be delicious and tender. And that is my experience. So I was glad to hear that these men who are very experienced with this cut of meat are saying what my cousin Susan and I have been complaining about. It's hard to make a good brisket anymore unless you can get the whole brisket, as one of these gentlemen on the show said, because with the whole brisket you're getting a lot of fat and you're all exterior fat, but you cook it with it, and then you also get that top piece of meat, which I always call deckle, but is also called the brisket tip or triangular cut, whatever it is. It's this piece of meat that rests on top of the flat cut or prime or first cut of the brisket, and that's the really juicy, well marbled, fabulously delicious piece of meat, as far as I'm concerned. And I never ever buy just a flatter brisket, and that was confirmed by these experts. For the Vegas strip steak, all most of them did was just grill it. One of them marinated it a while. I don't believe so much in marinades these days. You know, one of them only marinated it for 30 minutes, and that doesn't do anything as far as I can tell. It doesn't really make the meat tender and doesn't add a lot of flavor. I don't know. They did it, though. And I think that guy actually, no, he didn't win. That guy didn't win. Anyway, to grill a piece of meat like this, you need very, very high heat and very fast. Meaning, I use my black iron skillet. I've mentioned this before. I heat my black iron skillet until it is so hot that a drop of water doesn't dance around. It actually evaporates as soon as it hits the pan. And then I put in my well-salted meat. Now, I don't put pepper on at this point. I like pepper at the end. I find that pepper can change flavor, not in a good way, if it's cooked over such high heat. So 2 minutes, for me, an inch thick steak, I'm ready to eat it after 2 minutes on either side. Now, 2 minutes is enough at this high heat to really sear the meat and give it a nice crust. And then you flip it over and you do the same thing. If you want medium rare, maybe 3 minutes. I don't like to cook mine more than 3 minutes. Now, if you have a hugely thick steak, like a 2-inch thick steak, I would, in fact, grill it for 3 minutes on either side and then stick it in a 500-degree oven for really no more than 5 minutes. That's a short time to cook after you've spent maybe 15 minutes preheating the oven. But it does work. That method does work. And you do end up with a really good sear on it. And inside will be juicy. I like to let my steak sit for a minute, literally 1 minute, before slicing into it. It gives a little chance for the juices to recede back into the meat. And if it's good meat, it should be really juicy. Now, good meat, what's good meat? Whether it's a Vegas strip steak or a T-bone or a filet or whatever, there are qualities to every piece of meat. There are good and bad. And I would say that your chances are getting a great steak are much greater if you use prime meat, if you buy prime meat. Now, a very, very small percentage of American beef is graded as prime. So don't be fooled by the word prime rib or prime this or prime that. They're all being used incorrectly. The only way the word prime should appear on your beef is if it is USDA graded prime. Now, every producer does not have to have his meat graded. There are other grades. There's prime, and then the standard, I should say, not say standard, but the usual grade in the supermarket is choice, which is right down underneath prime. And then there's standard and utility, which you never, ever see in a supermarket, although perhaps they sneak it in somehow. You know, maybe, I don't know, ground beef could be less than prime or choice. But I think it's only about 2, maybe 3% of all beef that is graded. And by, as I said, it's optional to the producer. He doesn't have to have this kind of grading done. The grading that's done, the inspections that are done by the USDA are for wholesomeness and not for the actual eating quality of the meat. And prime meat is extremely well marbled, meaning there's lots of threads of fat running through it and looks like marble. And it has a very thick and nice coating of fat on the outside, but most butchers will trim most of that away anyway, so you don't really get to see too much of that, but it should be a good creamy color of fat. And that fat meat is going to be extremely flavorful and juicy. That's one thing. Nowadays, there is other factors that you can see even in the supermarket. For instance, there's now grass-fed beef. Now, that left on their own, cattle will graze and eat grass their whole lives. But the American method of raising beef or raising cattle for beef is that after they've been on the range for not very long, they're sent to feedlots, which are big enclosures where the animals are fed grain and not grass. And those are grain-fed animals. And if you remember back in the old days, they always used to say corn-fed Iowa beef. Well, that's grain-fed beef, and to me, that's really good beef. But the mode these days is people who are conscious of animals and animal rights, et cetera, and the quality, the eating quality and nutritional quality of beef are tending to favor grass-fed beef. I mentioned some time ago that I was buying some grass-fed ground beef at my supermarket. It's a branded Thomas Farms. It's a branded beef, and it comes in several different ratios of fat to lean. I tend to use 80% lean or 85% lean at most when I make hamburgers, and I must say I was enjoying this meat, the hamburgers, but then I made a bolognese sauce with it, and I didn't like the flavor. So grass-fed meat definitely has a different flavor than grain-fed beef, and most of us are all accustomed to grain-fed beef. So you may, in theory, like the idea of grass-fed beef or range-fed beef, but it does have a different flavor. You might have to get used to it.
I have a great story for you on that. Le Bon's, which has their own butchers in the store years ago, they sold nothing but USDA prime and grade meats.
Really?
And then I used to shop
at Le Bon's. I don't remember that.
Yeah, and then they switched because customers asked for grass-fed beef, so they got Piedmont, grass-fed all-natural beef, right? And they had to reinstitute putting in USDA the prime beef because the cooking differences between the grass-fed beef and the regular beef that they had the cooking times were different, and so they had to end up putting both beefs in the case because a lot of people that went to the grass-fed beef just didn't like the way it cooked and didn't like the way it compared to a USG a prime cut of beef.
Well,
I can understand that totally. The grass-fed beef definitely has a different flavor, and it is leaner. Because after all, the animals are out on the range. Yeah.
Right.
They're getting a little exercise there.
Marshall and I...
Whereas the cattle that are grain-fed are immobile. They're in pens, and they can't really get around, but they can stand there and eat. And so that does tend to make a difference, not only in the amount of fat, but in the kind of fat. And certainly the leaner the meat, the tougher it is to, well, the tougher it is, but also the tougher it is to cook it so that it's still juicy because there's so little integral fat. For instance, people ask me frequently, buffalo, you know, have you ever eaten bison? It's really bison, not buffalo. And I've eaten it many, many times, but unless it's cooked, I would say rare, it's not appealing to me at all. Unless it's very underdone compared to other meat, it has no juice to it because it's so lean. And by the way, I'm experienced in cooking this kind of meat because in Italy, in all those years of my cooking school, the main meat that we cooked was literally water buffalo meat because my school was on a water buffalo farm. And, you know, the water buffalo are great for milk to make mozzarella. The women are, the females are. But what do you do with all those males? And what they do is they butcher them for meat. And in Italy, in the south of Italy, where they raise a lot of water buffalo, they do try to market it as a better nutrition value than other. By the way, they don't have very good beef in general in the south of Italy. Lamb, to me, and pork are the two best meats, certainly not beef. And somebody's yelling in the audience, veal, what about veal? Well, you know, they don't really have much veal in the south of Italy. I think that all those Italian-American veal dishes really come from the hotels and fancy resorts in Italy where they did make veal because it was a luxury product. But, you know, I once ordered veal marsala in Marsala. I thought, well, here I am in Marsala. I should try veal marsala in Marsala. Well, of course, that's an Italian-American dish, not an Italian-Italian dish. And it was pretty horrible. The meat was horrible. And they didn't know how to do it the way I knew how to do it. So I gave, and of course, it's not a dish from Marsala. It's a dish from the Bronx. So it's a dish from New York that spread around. It's a very good dish. I'm not saying it's not, but it wasn't a good dish in Marsala. So there are just so many different meat products out there now, beef products, that it's hard to keep track. Besides this Vegas strip steak, another new one is called tri-tip. And I did watch a barbecue pitmaster where they were given a piece of tri-tip to cook, and two of the three were totally in the black. In the dark is what I mean to say about how to cook this piece of meat. It's yet another piece of chuck that has been butchered out to make a kind of steak, although it looks more like a roast. I saw some in the butcher the other day. And then there are other, the flat iron steak. These are all kinds of chuck. And one of these days, when I have some time, I'm going to pomegranate. I go anyway. Pomegranate is the largest kosher supermarket in the world. I'm told there's nothing like it even in Israel, where there's a market for such a thing. But there's also a market for such a thing in Brooklyn. Pomegranate is on Coney Island Avenue and Avenue L. And if you want to drive over, they actually have valet parking. A supermarket with valet parking. And they have an incredible butcher department, meat department.
And they
do, in fact, sell prime kosher meat.
And do they get
There's no reason why kosher meat can't be prime also. Pardon me?
Do they get the whole, what did you call it, the primal parts?
Primal cuts. You know, I'm pretty sure that they do. And what I wanted to say is that the kosher market has known for a very long time that there are many little pieces of meat in that primal cut of chuck, a very big piece of meat, that are suitable for roasting dry and not just braising, and suitable for making into a piece of grill, a meat that you can grill, tender enough to put on a barbecue or, as I do, black iron skillet or under the broiler, whatever it may be. And they have names, kosher names, meaning names that are just used in the kosher market. And I always wonder, where on the chuck is this piece from? So one day I'm going to go to Pomegranate. I know the owner, and I bet you he'll let me come into the butchering section in the back and see how they're dividing up these pieces of chuck. Just a little note on kosher meat. I'm going to be talking about this at the Evo Institute in a week or so. The Evo Institute is an institute of studies of Yiddish stuff, meaning Jewish stuff. And the meats in the kosher butcher are only the forward cuts. For instance, and you cannot eat, if you're kosher, the meat from the rear end of the animal. You can actually, but it requires a delicate cutting procedure that most butchers do not want to perform because there's no market for what results. But if you're in Israel, where there is a market, they do in fact do this procedure, and you can eat meat from the rear end of the animal. So anyway, it's very complicated and confusing. I recommend anybody who's interested in this and the various cuts of beef go online and find a really good diagram of which there are many, many online, and it'll show you where everything comes from. But it doesn't show you where all these kosher chuck cuts come from. But I think the kosher butchers have it one up on the non-kosher butchers because they don't have to discover the Vegas strip steak, as this Dr. Mata claims he discovered it. Well, it was there all along. He just figured out how to cut it out in an efficient way because he's got a PhD in butchering. But the kosher butchers know all these things. So, I don't know. I'm really into meat lately. The other night we went to a restaurant here in Brooklyn called French Louis, where I had not been, but a bunch of cousins got together and we went there. And mainly because one of my cousins, who is also meat-obsessed, couldn't wait to eat again, something I hadn't eaten, their leg lamb chop. It is this vast piece of grilled lamb. It really was fabulous. And it's under they have a little steak frite menu, and they do a lamb. They call it I forget what they call it, but it's basically cut from the leg. Very tender. And they also do bavette. Bavette is a cut that you see on French menus, it's a French word.
That you do not see here.
Generally referring to the hanger steak. When the French go out for a steak frite, they usually get bavette and frite.
Right.
So,
and then,
pardon
me? I said right, and then Marshall's saying I've got it. Because there was initially confusion around here, a hanger and skirt and flank, by the way.
A hanger steak is the short muscle of the diaphragm, and the skirt steak is the long muscle of the diaphragm. Used to be a very, very inexpensive cut.
Right.
Now I just saw it in the butcher the other day for $20 a pound, which is not an inexpensive cut. That was actually more than the rib steaks.
I know.
Which did, of course, have bone in it, but still. Anyway, it's now a very expensive cut. It started becoming expensive when fajitas became popular because it is the meat for fajitas.
That's right. And
so,
supply and demand.
These days, it's too expensive. You go to a Mexican restaurant and order fajitas, you're not getting a skirt steak, I guarantee you.
To be continued, says Marshall. He doesn't
actually
say that.
Well, I think we have to quit it now.
That's what he means.
Two by
yes.
My clock.
Yep. Well,
so anyway, next week, I know we talked about pasta shapes, so we can do that next week.
Or more meat. Yum.
Or more. I don't think we need to talk more about meat unless I discover yet another new cut. But I'm curious to eat a Vegas strip steak that's been well butchered. And I'm not sure I'm going to get it in Brooklyn, but I think, by the way, you don't get it in Vegas either. I think it was just a very clever name.
It is.
And that's why it caught on so well. Like Flatiron Steak, you know, is another clever name. But it's a piece of chuck.
Like
and with that.
It's all chuck to me.
It reminds me of line caught fish.
Okay. Line caught. Well, that's another story altogether.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, have a great week, everybody.
Good luck on your mission.
Eat your meat.
Yes. Right. Good luck on your mission.
So I must say, at my cousin's get together on Saturday night, I ordered some liver mousse to start, and my cousin sitting next to me said, "Oh, that looks so good." I said, "You know, it looks good, but my body is craving meat and liver because my doctor recently told me I'm iron deficient." So my body is actually, I'm listening to my body say, "Eat liver, eat liver, eat meat."
It works.
High in iron.
All right.
All right.
Take care.
Have a great week, everyone.
Yeah, you too, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.